You are about to hear the first lecture of the course, The Dilemma, presented by Rabbi Bilinski in Ariel Center 2017. For more information about our programs, please visit our website, arielcenter.org. First lecture.
Welcome, everybody, to our new course, The Dilemma. We are going to be looking at real legal cases that have come up in modern legal system, and we're going to be analyzing them from the perspective of view of Talmudic law. And we will see that even though most of us think that the legal system is pretty clear and cut and dry, there are many situations where things are really not so clear, and I'm sure we are going to be presenting questions here where all of you sitting here around the table will have different answers, and we will be asking you to voice your opinion and to explain to us why you think so. And the way we are going to be proceeding this class and most of the following classes is that first we gonna present three cases, real cases that have happened in real life, and then we will try to figure out what the ruling in Jewish legal system would be, and we will try to do it the way Talmud does it. The way Talmud does it, if there is a question which is presented to a rabbi, what rabbis do, rabbis look for a precedent. At least this is one of the ways how Talmud rules on issues. Rabbis look for a precedent in the past that is recorded and ruled on. But then the discussions between the rabbis could occur if someone has a claim, one of the rabbis or one of the sides has a claim that these cases are not similar. And we will have to determine whether the cases are similar or not. If this similarity, is it affecting the ruling in our case or it's not? So we will have to look at cases that are presented to us here. Then we have to look at several cases presented in recorded Jewish law and figure out which one of the cases from Talmud or from other parts of Torah are most similar to the ones we are talking about here. And this is what our ruling is going to be based on. You know, they say there is a Jew who had a little chicken farm in a shtetl, in a small town. And then he sees that a dog is running into his farm and eats one of the chickens. He gets very upset. He starts finding out whose dog it is. And told me, oh, that's a dog of this big lawyer who lives in our town. He figured, no, if the guy is a lawyer, you know, maybe it's a good chance that he's going to realize himself that he is responsible for the damage. So he knocks on his lawyer's door and, like all Jews, starts with a question. He says, excuse me, you're a lawyer, right? He says, yes, I am. Could you please tell me, if somebody's dog eats up in another person's chicken, is the owner of the dog responsible? The lawyer says, sure, he is. The Jew says, well, I've got news for you. Your dog just ate my chicken and I have witnesses. The lawyer says, oh, I'm terribly sorry. Please tell me how much the chicken was and I will reimburse you. The person tells him the price of a chicken. Price of a chicken was 10 rubles. He gives him 10 rubles and the Jew walks away. Next day, he gets a bill from this lawyer for consultation, 250 rubles. We are starting off with three real cases that have happened. We have case number one. In November of 2015, Daniel Cohen, who is 31 years old, was standing at Tachana, at a bus station at Rishon LeZion in Israel. And this was during a wave of terror attacks by Arabs when they were stabbing the Jews. And as he was standing at the bus station at Rishon LeZion, he suddenly felt a sharp pain. An Arab terrorist wrapped his arm around his neck and started stabbing him with a knife, and did so several times. Daniel Cohen was able to fight back And thank God, another person, a Jewish passerby, came to his assistance. And together, they were able to fight off the terrorist. They called an ambulance. Magin David Adom came, and Daniel Cohen was taken to a hospital, and the terrorist was arrested. When Daniel Cohen woke up in the hospital after a surgery, he was told that his life was saved twice. Because, first of all, his life was saved after the stabbing that he has received in his abdomen. But also, while they have been doing the surgery for the cut from the stabbing, they discovered a cancerous growth right in the place where the stabbing was. And they have removed the growth. And had this growth not been discovered now, but only a month or two later, it would have been already too late. In an interview that Daniel Cohen gave to NRG News, he said that the terrorist attack saved his life twice. Now, we have a question. It's a real-life question. When this terrorist is tried, is it possible for him to demand a leniency because of his terrorist attack? Somebody's life was actually saved? Because if you think of it, he actually saved somebody's life. Had Daniel Cohen not been stabbed, he would have died, probably, because of the cancer that would not be discovered. Can the terrorist ask for leniency?
Yes.
You all say no. Okay, I accept your answer.
His intent was to kill.
Yeah.
The terrorist's intent was to kill. So regardless of whether or not he was successful.
Okay, very good. Now I want to ask you a question. Let's say, in theory, Daniel Cohen, after the terrorist attacks, sues the terrorist for the damages. Because Daniel Cohen incurred large medical bills, he was out of work for a while, he is now suing the terrorist for his damages. Can the terrorist rebuff this lawsuit by saying, I actually don't have to pay him anything, I saved his life? Or can the terrorist at least receive leniency in his judgment of paying for damages? We're not only talking about paying for damages.
Can they determine which parts of the hospital bill was for the stabbing and which was...
Let's say they can.
They can?
Yeah.
Then I would say he would only have to pay for the stabbing.
Entirely. Maybe he could receive leniency because he saved somebody's life.
Stabbing. It's moral part, but stabbing somebody is criminal.
No. This is a criminal lawsuit.
Yeah. If there's a criminal lawsuit
and there's a civil lawsuit. Two separate things. Right now we're talking about civil one.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because it doesn't have to know.
So if you have an Arab oncologist that sees a growth on somebody, comes up with a knife and cuts it off and says, see, I'm saving your life because it looks like cancer, then the intent was to cut off the cancer.
Yeah, but
when he was stabbing the guy...
Okay, I agree with you that this case is therefore easy.
If he has a good lawyer, the lawyer can say...
Another Mr. Cohen.
Yeah, okay. The guy can keep because cancer.
Now, the cases get more complicated as we go on. Hold on a second. That's your seatbelt. Because next case is about actually a vehicle. On Monday, July 25th, 2016, a group of young men were walking outside of Irish Nobleman Pub in Chicago on the west side when they spotted a laptop in a pickup truck. Surveillance footage posted by the pub owner showed the thieves breaking into the vehicle to steal the computer. So guys were walking by, saw a truck parked with a laptop, and they break the window and take the computer. They were so focused on their robbery that they did not notice that there was a dog in the back seat of a truck. It happened to be that it was a very hot day, and dog was dying in the back seat of a truck because the owner left it there with the windows closed. So had they not broken the window, the dog would have died. they saved the dog's life. Now, when the thieves were caught, their lawyers presented the following question. If there is a person walking down the street and he sees a dog in a car, and it's very hot, and the windows are closed, and the dog is about to die, and the car is locked. According to the law, he could, or maybe even should, break the window to save the animal. And if he does it, according to the law, he will not be liable for the broken window, because he did it to save the animal. Now, the thieves were caught with a laptop. The laptop they stole was returned, and they are ready to be responsible for the theft of the laptop. The question is, should they be held responsible for breaking of the window?
And there was always a misdemeanor.
Depending on what the first.
No, vandalism is a minor crime.
One second.
Because they left the crime.
Who thinks that they should be responsible for breaking of the window?
Still.
Because it was first intent.
They should be responsible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who thinks you should not be responsible for breaking the window? Nobody thinks they should not be responsible for breaking the window?
It's a legitimate argument in court, right?
Okay, Igor, why?
There is no way to prove. Maybe they saw the dog, broke this thing, they decided to see it. It doesn't matter.
They said they didn't see the dog.
Oh, so if they said they broke the window to get the laptop, it just happened to be, then they're guilty of that. But it's just vandalism. It's the theft of the computer that's the main crime. So who cares?
No, another charge.
What if they had a gun on them? Let's charge them for that stuff.
No, but Chris, how many charges does a robber receive?
Theft, jail time, we'll teach them not to steal.
And breaking the window.
Yeah, what difference does it make at this point?
How much jail time does he get?
There is no jail time for breaking a window.
Or how much fine does he get?
How a burglar is defined as breaking and entering.
Right.
We have a lawyer here.
So what does the lawyer say?
You have to look at the statute for the window thing and find out if intent is a requirement.
So how do you call it
if the window is open in the car and the computer is there and you reach in and take it? Is it not burglary?
It's burglary.
Nothing was broken. Right? So the point
is... Burglar does not mean it's broken.
If I leave my front door open,
somebody comes in and takes something from my house, it's still burglary.
Okay. Because Ryan said that... It's defined as breaking something in order to reach.
No, breaking and entering.
Ingrid and Brian both said that the issue is intent, right? Because you mentioned that the issue is what was their first intent. And this is a very good point when we will be discussing it from Talmudic perspective. We will actually come to discussion of whether intent is important. Now, a third case. Third case takes us a little bit further back in history. In 1894, for those of you who remember, maybe somebody is that old.
I wasn't guilty of that day.
Okay. In 1894, Tsar Alexander was attempting to do what many Russian rulers were trying to accomplish, is get a handle on alcoholism in Russia. I've got news for you to this very day. It was not very successful. But, you know, everybody tried, okay? So Tsar Alexander was trying to limit access of people to alcohol. He did not create a prohibition. This would not work in Russia. But he made laws that allowed only government establishments to sell alcohol. And it was only specific times, and supply was limited, and certain places, as a matter of fact, most of it was sold in large cities, not in small villages. And this way, he was trying to solve the problem of alcoholism. This law specifically created the problem for Jews, because Jews traditionally were in liquor business. And the reason why Jews were in liquor business because they were prohibited from owning land, so they were not able to do a lot of jobs, because back then the economy was agricultural, and they didn't have programmers or lawyers or doctors in every place, and most of jobs were agricultural. Jews were not allowed to own land, and liquor, as we know, by most part, is kosher. So Jews were able to deal with something kosher and have a business. That's why many liquor stores or inns or bars were owned by the Jews. And Jews suffered from this law tremendously. And the law of 1894 would help the Jews, that as it always works in Russia, every law and every prohibition creates a lot of opportunities for black market. And that's exactly what was happening back then. From the very end of 19th century, the law actually didn't exist for very long because everybody was selling and buying alcohol illegally. And Jews were benefiting from it as well. Jews who used to own legal inns or liquor stores just now were doing the same thing just underground, a lot of them. And Tsar was sending his inspectors and policemen to check and see who does it, who doesn't do it. And there were very heavy fines for selling alcohol illegally. A Jew was involved in this illegal activity. He was selling alcohol, and he had in his house a big and nice barrel of good whiskey. It was sitting in his backyard. The barrel was legally allowed to drive, so he was 18 years old. So, and in his backyard sits this barrel. A customer comes to buy some of this whiskey or moonshine, whichever way, I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what it was. And by mistake, while examining the whiskey, breaks the entire barrel. And all of it spills onto the ground and everywhere. The owner is devastated. That's his livelihood. That's a lot of money. Whole barrel of whiskey is gone. And he obviously is intending to sue the buyer or the attempted buyer for this amount of whiskey. But exactly 1 minute after this barrel breaks and all of this whiskey gets spilled onto the grass, comes an inspector and says that they heard that this house sells illegal alcohol and they are about to search the entire house and the backyard and all the premises for whiskey. Inspector searches all over for it and obviously does not find because it was just spilled in the backyard. The fine for whiskey would have been much greater than the loss of the broken barrel. Never mind the fact that the government would have seized the illegal barrel of whiskey. So, as a matter of fact, the attempted buyer who broke the barrel of whiskey saved a lot of money to the seller. Now, the seller still comes to the Jewish court, because both of them were Jews, and going to Russian court would not help. They both were involved in illegal activity. Now both Jews come to the Jewish court, and the attempted seller is still trying to collect from the attempted buyer the amount for the broken barrel of whiskey. Now my question to you is, do you think he should be awarded the money?
Yeah. I think he... Okay.
Who thinks yes?
He should have to pay.
You think he should have to pay for the whiskey?
Yes.
The attempted buyer?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's a consequence of his action. He broke the barrel, so the whiskey spilled out, so therefore he needs to pay for it.
Okay, and the fact that something that this act also saved a lot of money to the seller does not matter. That's what you're saying.
Right, because it's a different... To me, it's two separate issues.
Two separate issues. Okay, very good. You agree, Brian?
I agree. I mean, it's a matter of paying restitution. He needs to be made whole for his loss.
Okay. Who thinks that the seller is not liable? Mm-hmm. Who thinks the buyer is not liable? Why?
Because it wasn't intentional.
Yeah. He didn't break. He didn't come here to break the barrel. break.
I'm sorry.
He was there.
They should share the cost of this.
Hold on a second. We're going to get his opinion. Hold on a second. So, just 1 second. So, Valera and Igor both say that he should not be liable because it was not intentional. Okay. So, you believe that intent matters. But let me ask you a question. What if he would have accidentally broken it, but the inspector would have not come a minute later? Would he be liable for paying later then?
The inspector is not relevant.
Also not. So, 1 second. So, you believe that people are not liable for their accidental action?
I mean, partially maybe, but not really. On my property, if you come to my property and I have, I don't know, armchair saying this way, and you accidentally went,
well, you have
actually, I have to pay you if you got something broken on yourself.
If you have
What
is it?
If you have some ancient ways,
I got a suit, and it costs $500.
If somebody drives
you
to the street and accidentally runs into your house, they don't owe you anything because they accidentally died.
It's your responsibility to protect this way.
That's a case.
So I will tell you the
difference.
According to both Jewish and civil American law, roughly, we could make such a statement, not, you know, there are a lot of ifs and buts, but roughly, people are responsible for their accidental actions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, in other words, if somebody, by mistake, you know, that's what most of car crashes are.
Yeah.
You know, accidental car crash, right? People don't create a car accident on purpose, but the body who is guilty of negligence, or even who caused the accident, even if there was no any specific negligence, party who caused the accident is liable for accidental damage.
Can I ask you a question? So if he broke the barrel,
right,
and that barrel fell off on him and broke his leg or arm,
okay,
so then what?
Okay, so that's a good question, but it's a separate question. No, it's a separate question, not related. Not related.
No, they should split the costs.
Okay, so 1 second.
No.
So somebody said here, Igor and Valera both said that he should not be liable because it's accidental, not intentional. And so you're telling me that the fact that the inspector came after it doesn't matter.
It's different.
Yeah, it's different.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Okay, but if, let's say it has been established that the law is that somebody is fully responsible for the damage that he did by accident, then would the visit by inspector lessen his responsibility or eliminate his responsibility?
Can I avoid my opinion?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what I'm thinking. First, there is a two thing. He's not responsible.
Right.
For two reasons.
Yeah.
First of all, there is, it was accident. Secondly, no damage done.
No.
There is no damage done to the guy.
There's no damage because the inspector would have seized the barrel anyway.
So no damage done. So if there is no damage done, what he was is a restitution. How much?
Okay.
Not, you know,
I hear. Very good.
That's very good.
Now, Inessa, you agree with Brian and Stephanie, right?
I don't know.
They said he is liable.
He's liable?
I never knew that you were liable if you didn't actually pay for this stuff. If you're still liable.
No, if somebody breaks,
liability is what you owe in damage. It's not what you owe in purchase.
For example, I go to the store and I break something.
Raise the bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And I'm liable.
You
buy it. And
right.
Liquor store. Before you buy, you're liable.
Not in the liquor store.
But generally, you break it, you buy it.
If you go pick up eggs in the supermarket and drop it,
mm-hmm.
You're liable for it. The store usually will say, we'll take the loss as long as you're purchasing the stuff from us. But lawyers on their side, if they wanted to sue you for a dozen of eggs, they would win the case. No worries about that.
I don't know.
They're afraid to lose customers.
Right.
So they'll take the loss on the apple you step on and don't pay for, or buy it and don't put that.
The other problem is it's more expensive.
Right. Igor thinks that they should split the cost. Why?
Because, so you had a business transaction and the accident happened. The guy that came to buy, he was going to buy something, but it wasn't clear whether he was going to buy it or not. when he broke things, he didn't take anything back, and there was no deal. So he should be responsible for the damage, but because he didn't receive any merchandise, he should also say, you know what, maybe that barrel wasn't as strong as it looked, so it's probably your fault it fell apart. So they should split the cost because it was a business transaction that didn't happen right. They should both take a little bit of a look.
Okay, I hear. Mark, you're sitting very quietly. What do you think?
Let's frame the question. All three cases, even though they were different, and they were purposely picked in their different levels of controversy, but and they were purposely picked this way, but they all have one common denominator. The bottom line of all these three cases is, with different details, but the bottom line of all of them is, the common denominator is, these are situations where the intentions of a person were bad, but the outcome or the actions were bad, but the outcome was good. The action was bad in all three cases. In one case, the terrorist stabbed a Jew. In second case, somebody broke the window. In the third case, by mistake, but did something bad. Okay. In the third case, broke a barrel. So the actions were bad. But in all three cases, outcome was good. Person's life was saved, a dog was saved, and the person was saved from a heavy financial loss because of a fine. So the actions were bad, but outcome is good. There are four questions. First two are for criminal court. Should the person who did these actions be responsible for it and be punished? If yes, second question is, should punishment be lenient or more lenient because the actual outcome was good? In civil court, the question is, can the criminal be sued for damages? Or maybe the court will say, well, since the actual outcome was positive, you cannot sue him. Like in a case of broken barrel, the Jewish court would tell these two Jews, listen, in reality, he saved you, so why you complain? And maybe, especially in a case like the last one, case study in C, which is the case with the broken barrel, maybe the person who broke the barrel actually could demand a reward from the seller, because he'll tell you, I saved you. Now you owe me. So the question is where actions are bad, but outcome is good. This is the framework of our debate. In Talmud, Tractate Nozir, page 23a. As you know, in Talmud, all pages are standard. All pages in Talmud are standard, which means in other literature, a lot of times, references go by chapter or in a paragraph. In Talmud, references go by page because pages are standard. And each page has two sides, side Aleph and side base. Okay, A and B, because page is actually not a page. Page is a sheet. Okay, so in Tractate Nozir, page 23a, there is a question that is posed. If somebody really wants to do something against God, you know, there are those Jews who, out of principle, do things against the Jewish law. I was told, somebody told me that their relative in Israel makes a point of finding pork to eat on Yom Kippur. Like, you know, she's an old lady, anti-religious, she makes a point to do that. So if somebody is exactly like this, and they want to find something not kosher to eat, and they get a pork, they buy pork, and they eat it, but after finishing a whole piece, they look at the wrapper and realize, oh, you know what, I bought pork, but by mistake, when I opened my fridge, I took wrong piece of meat, and I by mistake took the piece that wasn't pork, it was actually kosher meat. Question is this person, you know, guilty of anything, guilty of nothing, guilty as if he ate pork, or
guilty just for her fault?
No, has this person transgressed anything? Because what is the similarity? Similarity is that he wanted to eat pork. He wanted to do something bad, just like these guys wanted to break into the window of a car to steal a laptop, or like a terrorist wanted to stab somebody. So now he wanted to eat pork, but by mistake he ate something kosher. Is he guilty of anything according to Jewish law?
There is no such thing as a mistake. It is a God willing. He has saved him from eating the
fine. Pork. I understand.
That's true. But
according to this logic, a person who stabbed a terrorist who stabbed a Jew also supposed to be not guilty.
No, wait a minute. He's on the spare the Arab to save this Jew. You know, he opened, they cut him open. You know, the Arab who gives it about the Arab. He couldn't go to court anyway. So that's it.
My question is, if you are saying that a Jew who wanted to eat pork and eat kosher meat by mistake is not responsible because outcome was good and doesn't matter what his intentions were, then you just exempted the terrorist from all his responsibilities.
If you don't know you're eating the pork, you think you're eating the kosher meat.
If you find your excuses as an accidental outcome, then you know what's going to happen? No. It encourages everybody to do something crazy terms of saying, okay. Now, okay. If you say Arab is okay because he found accidentally, then Arabs are going to be stabbing Jews left and right looking for cancer. And then people are going to be breaking windows in every car because they thought, I'm telling you, and people will be breaking windows in every single car saying, I thought there was a dog in there, but there was a computer. Yeah. I'm sorry. So, have a nice day.
Next time I break into someone's car, I'll bring my own dog.
And you know, big hunk of pork, you'll say, it's a Chernobyl chicken.
We have to be the lawyer here, you understand, right?
A chicken like this. Oh, no!
Who thinks that person who was intending to eat pork and by mistake ate something kosher is guilty? Who thinks? Guilty. Who thinks that he is not guilty? Brian thinks he's not guilty.
He's just being contrarian.
Yes.
He's just being contrarian.
He's politically correct.
No.
Out comes kosher. Talmud tells us, one who reaches out to take pork with the intention of eating it, but accidentally takes lamb instead, stands in need of atonement and forgiveness. He has to repent for what he was trying to do wrong, but it means that he is not liable in Jewish court. Why? Because Torah tells us we cannot punish people for their intentions. We could only punish them for their actions. In other words, if somebody wants to murder someone but did not do anything for it, he cannot be charged for attempted murder because he was only thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he started implementing it, then he could be charged. We cannot charge people for their intentions. American court works the same way. Nobody can be put in jail for wanting to kill somebody. If somebody wanted to kill somebody and started implementing it, he could be charged for attempted murder because of the actions he took towards it, even though he didn't kill somebody yet.
So if somebody wants to kill somebody, goes and stabs somebody else, says, I'm not killing anybody because I wanted to kill this person, so I didn't kill him.
No, he stabbed.
So you could charge a person for the actions towards that person, not this person.
He stabbed.
Exactly that. You cannot, that's right.
He just wanted to kill him.
That's right. We cannot have a thought
for that person now has cancer, and you just killed him. And you saved the dog because the ambulance was where the dog was dying.
It comes with the action, and this one was not an action.
He and an asshole, they gave him kosher food on top of that.
They didn't eat the pork.
Please.
But other one, he did step.
Like
no,
that.
He did step, and another one didn't eat.
Okay.
That's right.
But really, our sages say afterwards that this case with pork is not like the three cases we spoke about. Why is the difference? Who's going to tell me? Yes, Red Stephanie?
Because the actions
happened.
Good.
That's right. At the moment of stabbing, the action was negative. At the moment of breaking the window, the action was negative. At the moment of breaking the barrel, the action, even though not intentional, but it was negative. The action was negative. Later on, the negative action brought to a positive result, but the action was negative. Here, when we see a person who is eating pork,
no,
who is eating what he thinks is pork, and really it's a kosher meat, the action itself is not negative. The action is positive because he's eating kosher meat.
So even though his intention was to eat pork,
that's right. And we cannot judge people because of their intentions, only because of their actions.
Rabbi, but you cannot compare pork with the third case, because in third case there is no intention at all.
You are correct. Okay.
Yeah.
So the analogy with pork is out.
Mm-hmm.
One strike out. Next one. Let's have next case and we'll see if there are similarities. We all know Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph, who was sold to slavery by his own brothers. Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph, his brothers, his 10 brothers, wanted to actually first kill him. And then they decided to throw him in a pit. And after throwing him in a pit, they saw the passerby caravan of merchants. And they decided to sell him into slavery to these people. As a result of that, he ended up then bought by Potiphar, and he was a slave in Potiphar's house, and then he was wrongly accused of a crime, and he ends up in jail, and after he ends up in jail, he is able to get out of jail because of his talent and Ruach HaKodesh, God-given knowledge of dreams, and he ascends to the second command in Egypt. He is a viceroy to Pharaoh. And then Yosef's brothers come to him because they need bread. And he welcomes them and he brings them into Egypt, and he doesn't display any hostility towards them for what they have done. But then their father, Jacob, passes away. And all the brothers are afraid that he was nice to them only because he didn't want to anger, their father, Jacob. And now, once Jacob has gone, now he's going to take revenge. And it says that after the burial of Jacob, Joseph's brothers began to realize the implications of their father's death. What if Joseph is still holding grudge against us, they said. He is likely to pay us back for all the evil we did to him. They came and threw themselves at his feet. Here they said, we are your slaves. Do not be afraid, said Joseph to them. Shall I take God's place? You might have meant to do harm, but God made it to come out good. He made it come out as it actually did, where the lives of great nation has been preserved. Now do not worry. I will fully provide for you and your children. He thus comforted them. He thus comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So now we see that Joseph completely forgave them and said, will I be in God's place? You intended to do something bad, but what came out was actually good. So, I'm not going to judge you. Here, the action was actually bad. The action was bad. So, there's no dissimilarity of the pork case we had before. The action was bad. Later on, it turned out for something positive. Yes?
But he, Joseph says that he's not going to take God's place. So doesn't that imply that God will still judge them for the negative action that they did, even though it did turn out good?
Okay.
So the difference of a question here is, you're asking a victim to make a decision if they want to pursue this or not. The guy that spilled, the guy that spilled the barrel he could have said, you know, you saved me some money, so I'm not going to sue you, right? But if he chose to take him to court, so if Joseph decided to take him to court, he would have won the case.
Okay.
And he chose to be non-vindictive, right? And forgiven.
Even if the victim chooses to forgive the perpetrator of the act, it still doesn't take away from the punishment that the perpetrator deserves. It's just that the victim has chosen to take the high road or said it's not worth the money or...
This is it. You are all exactly correct. In other words, in Joseph's case, we are speaking to a personal decision of a victim, and this cannot be a reflection on how courts should be ruling. In other words, there are behaviors which are considered to be honorable, but we cannot say that they are demanded by the law. And it is very easy to make an argument that really the brothers should have been punished, and maybe, like Stephanie said, God will choose to punish them, whatever it is, but Joseph decided to take a stand above the letter of the law and not to be angry at them. So in other words, there's a difference between someone's personal behavior and legal requirements of responsibility. Okay, very good. Next case, things get more complicated. If there's a child that falls into a water, God forbid, and there's a fisherman who is right at the shore, and he saves him. He throws his net, and he saves the child. Now, everything what I'm describing happened on Shabbos. And we know that fishing on Shabbos is prohibited. You're not allowed to catch fish on Shabbos. It's one of the 39 prohibitions. Catching fish is. So catching fish is not allowed on Shabbos. Using net actually is not allowed on Shabbos. Now, there's a fisherman who sees a child drowning, and he throws his net into the water, and he saves the child, but together with the child, he gets actually some fish into his net. He picks up the net. He saves the child. He does a great deed. He saves someone's life. And he should be awarded all the rewards that one deserves for saving someone's life. But the thing is, he also caught fish. Is he liable, according to Jewish law, for transgressing Shabbos because he caught fish?
No.
Because saving life overtakes that.
Yeah, I said the same.
Yeah, the question is, can you keep the fish?
What if you put
the fish?
Okay.
So you can break Shabbos because you can save life. Can he keep the fish is the question.
Okay. Very good.
He was fishing or he was just there? That is another question.
No.
He was fishing. Or he was actually sitting and watching the water.
No.
That's a difference.
He was walking by. Now, let me ask you another question. Okay, very good. So you all agree that if a fisherman throws his net to save someone's life and unintentionally catches fish, he is not liable for transgressing Shabbos.
No.
Now, let me ask you another question. What if there's a Jew who goes fishing intentionally on Shabbos? He throws his net to catch fish, and he catches fish, and unintentionally, he saves a drowning person with his net. When he pulls up his net, there is a person whose life he just saved. His intention was to catch fish. He didn't even know there was somebody drowning. He just saved someone's life. Now, he's obviously praiseworthy for saving someone's life, but the question is he liable for fishing?
Yes, because he was fishing. He was fishing. This one was walking by. It's a different story. The guy was sitting fishing. He was breaking the law.
But mitzvah.
First of all, let's establish if this case is similar or different. The case, this case, there is actually a negative action, right? As opposed to the first case we're trying to compare to, because fishing on Shabbos is prohibited. There's an action which is prohibited by Jewish law. Okay? And we are also talking about court's ruling. We are not talking about someone's personal feelings. Okay? So therefore, the two dissimilarities with previous two cases are not present. Okay? So, any other opinions why this case could be different?
The one who's fishing and incidentally saves life, or who basically a person who uses something, breaks Shabbos to save somebody, and it doesn't matter if it's a net or a saving thing, the tool to save somebody is irrelevant, right? So if somebody intentionally saves somebody's life, then they're not breaking Shabbos.
Okay.
But if they're using dynamite and accidentally kill a shark that could have killed the thing.
No, let's say his intention is to break Shabbos. His intention is
he broke
to...
Shabbos.
That's a different...
His intention was to fish on Shabbos. And he accidentally saves someone's life.
And he should be held liable for breaking Shabbos.
Yeah, but he gets a mitzvah for saving life anyway. Yeah,
right. Okay.
So the whole reason is to cancel each other. It's Talmud, Tractate Menachos, page 64a. Say a child has fallen into the sea on Shabbos.
But a particular fisherman was unaware of this. He spreads his net to catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to catching fish, he also saves a child. Obviously, all this is happening on Shabbos.
Was the child fishing too? Because he might have been breaking Shabbos too. He should have drowned in the first
place. Let him drown.
The child wasn't Jewish.
So guess what? There is an argument of rabbis. There's a machlokes. Rabba says that he is not liable. Rava says he is liable. Rabba says he is not liable because we decide the matter by his actual deed. Rava says that he is liable because we decide the matter based on his intentions. So in other words, before, if I'm not mistaken...
It's the same case as everywhere else.
Yeah. I think you two, I forgot who, brought the issue of intentions. So let's see. If we say that what matters is intention, then the person who fishes on Shabbos and accidentally saves a child from drowning is liable because his intention was to fish. At the same time, this will mean that in our case with terrorists, terrorists will be liable because his intention was to kill, and the person who is breaking the window of a car to steal a laptop will be liable because these were his intentions. Case with the barrel will be unresolved because there was no intention there, only action, accidental action. Okay. According to Rova, who says that the actions is what matters, he is not liable because he incidentally saved a child, that exonerates him. And according to this logic, possibly that a person who steals a laptop would not be liable for broken window because his intention ended up being positive. The halacha, the law, is ruled according to Rabbah, which means that we go according to intentions, which means that if he was intending to do harm, then he is guilty. If he did an action with an intention of harm, we cannot prosecute the person for his only thoughts. We cannot prosecute the person for his thoughts. But if there was an action, and this action was malicious, then his thoughts matter. Now,
from the net just to save lives.
Hold on a second.
Case.
Yeah, exactly. My wife fell in, and I was just looking for unclarified.
And my mind is clearly right, sir. And this has been the recorded law in Jewish tradition. But we cannot avoid an argument in any Jewish place. This is our chart of all three cases. In Talmud's case, desecration of Shabbat, which means fishing, right? Murder, burglary, and vandalism, right? The intention.
Why intention vandalism?
Okay.
It's not intention, it's accident.
Well, I guess. Maybe they were looking at it as intentional act of destroying.
Maybe he specifically wanted.
Non-drinking Jew.
Maybe he was drunk.
Right.
Yes.
Vandalism could be accidental also. I don't know.
No, sorry, no, it's breaking the window for burglary.
Yeah. In, you know, their actions end up being positive, so therefore outcome is positive in all cases, but the actions are negative, the outcome is positive. Okay? But now, we have a argument again. What is the argument? There are in more modern times, there are two rabbis who have been arguing about the implementation of this law. There is a sefer, a well-known book of halacha called Makor Chaim. It is written by Rabbi Chaim Segalowitz, who lived in 19th century, and he writes the following. It would seem to me that vandal is not liable, and he writes specifically about the case with the barrel, because the breaking of the barrel of alcohol, he saved the vendor from the penalty, and that and thus did him a great service. My proof from Talmudic passage of fishermen. He's not liable, right? Because the outcome is positive. He's not liable. Though, there's another rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen. He wrote a sefer called Binyan Shlomo, and he writes that the case of fishermen is different. Why? Because the act of fishing, the action of fishing was the same as the action of saving a child. In a case of broken barrel, the action of breaking barrel came first. The money that was saved to the seller came later. And Rabbi Cohen writes, one second. At the moment when he broke the barrel, did he become, next second, did he become liable for the content of a barrel? Sure, he did become liable. Now, who said that we could take this liability off him because of something else that happened later on? He already became liable. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? If he would come to them knowing behind him that people coming to check them out, and instead of start explaining them and tell them, just push the barrel, break it, it's spilled out, then they come in,
and they call everybody, hey, show up,
he knew they coming, okay? He broke the barrel intentionally, not accidentally, intentionally broke the barrel.
To save the person.
To save the person. Okay. Then what?
So you, no.
Then the action comes.
Then the case would be different.
Why? I mean, this is the same thing.
No. Then it would be similar to a person breaking the window in order to save a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's not this case. It's not the case. Or it would be similar to a person stabbing somebody in order to discover cancer.
No, it's not.
Right. It's not.
It's not.
The case is different.
When they break the window or stab somebody, their attention was actually do some harm. This guy never had the attention to do any harm.
But let's say, let's change the case. Let's say he intentionally broke because of anger. He thought that the whiskey was not good.
That's
he broke.
No, but even
let's say he intentionally broke the barrel because he thought the whiskey was not good.
Okay. No, that's the third story now.
Okay, third story.
So Talmud says that a fisherman is exonerated because he saved life while he was doing Shabbat.
Yes.
Yeah, but he was,
that's very cool.
But you know what? My question is it's what I asked you before. He was sitting there fishing, or he was just walking by. Yeah,
he was fishing.
Said, well, if he was sitting fishing,
can he be exonerated just because?
No.
He was sitting fishing, really? Fishing. All of a sudden, child ran in, and then it's
your same thing.
He was fishing before. He was breaking the Shabbat before, then he saved the child.
Right.
It's a different story.
Right. At the moment he started fishing,
and then he just decided to fish.
He already
through the net.
It encourages people not to do
things. That's a different story.
Does
a positive outcome exonerate a negative deed?
The rabbis.
It's not. No. You see?
So Rabbi Sigalovitz, Makor Chaim, the sacred Makor Chaim, Rabbi Sigalovitz, says that positive outcome always exonerate the deed. According to Rabbi Sigalovitz, a fisherman is not liable.
True.
And
really?
The person who broke the barrel is not liable.
No, he said he's liable. No, he said,
one second. According to
Sigalovitz.
According to Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, he says that he is not liable only if it was the same action, the same deed that saved somebody. If the action that caused damage was the very action that brought positive outcome, then he's not liable. So terrorist would be liable. Why? Because he stabbed the person. Doctors later on discovered that was cancer. So doctors did it. The person didn't do it. He stabbed somebody.
He stabbed, he opened him up. He opened him there.
So in other words, according to Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, in a Sefer Binyan Shlomo, he writes that according to him, terrorists would not be exonerated, he would be liable. According to him, the case with what would be the case with breaking the car window?
Exonerated.
He would be exonerated because the very action of breaking the window saved the dog. And according to him, the case with breaking the barrel, he would be obligated. Why? Because the action was negative. Later on, it brought a positive result.
Action has to be different in order for consideration.
No. You see, we a lot of times confuse when action becomes positive or when negative action brings to a positive result. And this is where he's trying to make a difference. Sometimes the action that we thought was negative turned out to be positive. Okay.
But that never happens.
What do you mean never happens? Breaking the car window to steal a laptop, that's what happened. It was an action that was intended as a negative, but turned out to be positive. Saved dog's life.
Rabbi, what if they break the window, they steal laptop, comes police, put handcuffs, and then through the broken window, police sees this dying dog.
That's exactly what happened.
No. Wait a minute. That would be the same as with the terrorist.
Yeah, and
so in this case,
the action of breaking the window saves the dog. Because so dog is not suffocating the carnival. The action of stabbing a Jew did not save him. Doctors found cancer because of the stabbing, but the action did not cause
him. Stab him in the same place.
My question is, for saving a dog, did anything else have to be done to save a dog besides breaking a window? No! The only thing that had to be done is to break the window.
And therefore it doesn't
And now the dog is safe. For stabbing over a Jew, did something else need to be done to save him from cancer? Sure it did!
What?
Doctors had to discover it and then...
If they just keep the window open, or they left the window open, the dog would not die.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So if you not stab him in that place and you have the groins, nobody would see it. So right. That was.
Let's hope to don't stab in the groin.
I mean, whatever.
Now, I'll tell you one very important rule. One other important rule of.
Is you Jews all this stuff?
I will tell you one second. If we looked right now only at one aspect of Jewish law, why? Because till this very day, modern American legal system and many other legal systems argue what is the purpose of punishment in the first place. Some say that purpose of punishment is paying back to the person or to the society for the crime committed. Some say that purpose of punishment is if you put people in jail to make sure people won't be able to commit any more crimes. Some say that purpose of punishment is to discourage future attacks, future wrongdoing. So really, every legal system has a combination of three. And we right now looked only at the liability factor. We did not look at the punitive factor, which is meant as a deterrent for future wrongdoings. Which means that even if, let's say, according to Rabbi Segalowitz, let's say, terrorists would end up being not responsible because the outcome was positive, the Jewish legal system is still encouraged to impose a punishment to deter future attacks. This is done only in a case, though, of intentional wrongdoing, because future deterrences are not applicable for accidental deeds, for accidental misdeeds. So therefore, according to what we have just learned, we see, and actually the halacha is like Rabbi Cohen, not like Rabbi Segalowitz.
Thank God. Because
in a case, in Talmud's case, with fishermen, according to Rabbi Cohen, the fisherman would be exonerated, right? Why? Because the same deed violated Shabbos and saved the child. According to Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, case study A with stabbing, he would be liable. Why? Because the action of stabbing did not save him. It's the fact that doctors found cancer as a result of stabbing saved him. In other words, had he been in the hands of, let's say, a bad doctor would have not found it. Okay? In the case of a dog suffocating in the car, the thieves would be exonerated for breaking the window. They would still be liable for stealing a laptop. But they would be not liable for breaking the window because their very action saved the dog. And in a case of breaking a barrel, he would be liable if it was... Why would he be liable? Because the action was negative. It brought later on to positive results, but the very action was negative. Now, but as we said, this is only from perspective of liability, not from perspective of deterrent of future crime. And Jewish courts are allowed and encouraged by Torah to exact punishments also for the purpose of deterring future crimes, which means that if, according to, let's say, American legal system, actually, the person who breaks the window was found liable for breaking the window, and this is not wrong according to Jewish system, because even though he would not be liable for damages, strict definition of damages, but
courts are allowed to exact punishments as a future deterrent, and this is why the ruling of American court was acceptable according to Jewish law as well.
But the Muri case,
yes,
is exonerated precisely of the encouragement, because the rabbis, the thinking seems to be that if I am doing something wrong, and here is my, I have an opportunity to do something right, but be discovered of doing something wrong, because I don't want to be discovered, right? I can choose not to save a child, let him drown, and continue doing what I'm doing. So, because I could be...
Why?
So the... Okay, give you a different... different perspective. So... No. Rob a bank, somebody robs a bank. Hold on, right, but he's exonerated specifically because so that people are not afraid to do something good and become famous and be found.
That's not the line because of thinking. That's not the reasoning.
But that is not the reasoning. That is precisely. Otherwise, fishermen were being
that's
punished.
Not the reasoning.
Next time he's going to let somebody drown.
Think about it this way.
Forget about that.
I understand your line of thinking.
But his actions are two separate actions. He was doing something wrong, and it's not like... He didn't just catch a child. He saw the child. He could have made a choice, and he knew he was going to do the right thing. And then everybody was going to know that he saved the child.
But they were going to find out. Talmud's case is if somebody goes fishing, not knowing that there is a child drowning, and he by mistake saves a child. And
he didn't by mistake save the child.
No, according to Talmud's case, he by mistake saved the child. That's what I wrote to you.
No, you said he fell. He was doing already something wrong, and then he saw the child and he threw the thing specifically to the child.
That was the first case. We heard four or five different scenarios.
You know, with the dying child.
So the point is, if somebody is robbing a bank,
has already been dead.
Say a child falls into a sea. I'm reading. Say a child fallen into a sea on Shabbat, but a particular fisherman was unaware of this. This is what Talmud says. He spreads net to catch a fish, but in addition to catching fish, he also saves a child. That's the case of Talmud.
Then he shouldn't be an exonerate.
Why not?
Sure.
Because everybody will be fishing and saying, I was looking for a child of my wife that she's missing and I thought she fell in.
No.
But if you have a separate action... You have somebody's robbed a bank and they're running away with money and then they see a dog stuck in a car, so they drop the money and they know they're going to get caught. They break a window. It's a separate action and process.
Save the dog.
And then they get caught. Then they should be encouraged to do these things and be exonerated, because next time they won't stop and the dog will die and they're still going to get caught, right? So that separate action and process of doing something wrong should exonerate you, because it'll encourage people to do good things whenever they have that opportunity.
I understand what you're saying, but I understand your line of thinking. But your line of thinking is a completely separate.
Okay, you robbed a bank, got in the car, had a car accident, broke a window, and there was a dying dog that fell out and saved it. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Your line of thinking is out of a completely different principle which we need to discuss here. And the principle is whether we should give people leniency in judgment as an encouragement for doing good deeds in the future. This deserves a separate class of its own, but we didn't discuss it here. We discussed here only liability, and we saw that liability, according to the halacha, the way it is ruled, after we learned the machlekes between Rabbi and Rova in Talmud, and after we saw the machlekes between Rabbi Segalovitz and Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, okay, and as the ruling is according to Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, we see that if the action, the very action, even though it had a negative intent, brought a positive result, then person is liable for it. But if the action had a negative intent and had a negative result, a positive result that came later on as a result of it is not counted. And this is the difference. In other words, Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen makes a difference between the very action
having a positive result, and a positive result coming as a later outcome of a negative action. And this is an important difference.
So a drunk driver driving and killing a suicide bomber on the way to a suicide mission in the car gets exonerated for being drunk driver?
He's still liable for killing the terrorist by accident.
It's
a wrongful death.
The outcome is positive because the car is in the
But you are not allowed to murder. You are not
exonerated for drunk driving.
It's mean he will not survive because they won't go.
No.
Over there, you might.
No.
There is an interesting spiritual lesson from everything we've discussed. We discussed legal side of it, which is the main part of our class, side to it as well. Very often, we are preoccupied with thinking about the intentions of someone's deed. Were the intentions positive or were the intentions negative? And even if somebody ends up doing something good, but because he had bad intentions, we still don't like it. If people give money to donation and they do it just to promote their own ego, to make themselves feel better, or if politicians do something good, oh, but they're doing it only because they need votes, okay? Or if our friends do us a favor, but we know, oh, he's doing it only because he wants my favor later on. So we are very often stuck on intentions. Jewish approach to life is what can be called by many people behaviorist, which means that if a person does a good thing, if the immediate outcome is good, frankly speaking, his intentions are not so important anymore. Now, it's better to do a good thing with good intentions, 100%. But if somebody does me a favor, even though he does it for bad reasons, I should appreciate it. Why? Because what counts is the action. If somebody gives a donation, even though he does it to promote himself, and he goes, oh, but he's doing it only because of his big ego. Maybe. But his actions are good. And same thing, by the way, on a larger scale with political talk is very popular nowadays. Politicians, a lot of times, do things, and the first thing you hear, if I see a politician who I don't like, and even though he's doing something good, my first response is, oh, he's doing it only because he wants votes. He's
doing it only the money that they're donating.
So the answer to it is, that might be the case, but what we look at is person's actions. And by the way, with regards to Israel, so many times you see different groups here in America support Israel and support Jews. And many times you hear, oh, but they support Israel only because their own religious beliefs that we disagree with. A lot of times, for example, many Christian groups support Israel. And people say, who don't like it, well, but they support Israel for wrong reasons. They support Israel because of their own religion, which is wrong. And they are doing it because they want all of us to become Christian one day, or whatever it is. So the answer is, that might be the case. I don't know. But what is the immediate outcome of this action right now? Right now, they are doing a good thing. So we should be thankful to them and accept it. Because, frankly speaking, if we will be accepting only good deeds which are done for pure good reasons, then this world will be left with very few good deeds. That's why our legal system stresses the point that we judge the outcome not as much as the intentions. Now, if person causes harm, then intentions could be counted in determining harsher or more lenient punishment. This is correct. So intentions are important to some extent, but they are not the main deciding factor. The main deciding factor is the outcome, not the intentions.
So if somebody steals money and then donates part of it, is it okay? What if somebody murders somebody and then donates all their organs?
And this is where our class came very handy. Your example contradicts one of the principles that we discussed in our class. The actual action was bad. It's later on something good came out, and that Torah prohibits. I'm talking about if the actual action is good. When somebody murders somebody to donate the organs, or when somebody steals money to donate to charity, the action is bad. It might lead, maybe later on, it will lead to something.
You can't prove intent. You can't prove intent.
No.
If they stole to donate, I doubt it, because it wouldn't be stole. But they could always say that.
I cannot prove intent. I can prove immediate outcome of the actions. The immediate outcome of theft is bad. It's prohibited. If they will, a second later, deposit it into a charity account, that's going to be a second later. But the immediate outcome is bad, just like the immediate outcome of stabbing is bad. The physical action of lifting the net, which is the prohibition of Shabbos, the actual action, the deed of lifting the net, which is a prohibition of Shabbos, the very deed also saved the child. He wouldn't be able to do one without
that. That's not what I said. I said a fisherman, he got fish and baby.
So,
right? So three throws, one baby.
So he will be liable for first two throws, he won't be liable for the last one.
Oh, there are separate lashes for that?
Sure.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I thought we were talking about the whole bottle of vodka thing.
No. We are talking about the action of lifting the net from the water at the moment when there are fish and a child there. So therefore...
Go fish.
So if they broke two windows, the second window, they would be liable?
That's right. If they broke two windows, second window, they'll be liable for?
That's right.
Like in three cars. The first two three cars, it wasn't dog, they're liable. When it's a dog, it is.
Right.
Case.
Right.
So
make sure that the dog is there.
So, but bottom line is, we should look at the actions of other people. Thank you very much. Next class is going to be dedicated to whether or not we're allowed to take the matters into our own hands when it comes to law. If somebody stole something from me, can I break into his house and steal it from him?